place up in the neck.
Good afternoon. We're going to call the State Departments and Veterans Budget Division to order for July, Monday. Boy, do I wish it was July. April 22nd, 2013 at about 3:03 p.m. A quorum is present. Members, today we're going to hear two bills, one relating to elections, one to campaign finance. Each bill and all supporting documents are in your packets. With that, we're going to start with Senate File 677, Senator Sebans' Omnibus Elections Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I do have an amendment, and this is not the first committee that this bill has been heard in. So I will first explain it. It's the A-17 amendment, and it's mostly technical.
Go ahead, Senator Steven. I think everybody have it?
Oh, no. A-17. Yep.
Is it?
Do you have it?
Okay. All right. Very good. So, and this isn't on there right now.
It's not on there.
I would move the A-17 to get the bill in the form that the author would like.
Senator Metzen has moved the A-17 amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, you want to explain that to us, Senator Steven?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Like I said, it's mostly technical. I shouldn't say, but there are a number of technical changes. The largest provision it starts on line 2.4, Article 8. Senator Bonhoff and Senator Kiffmeyer worked hard on an electronic poll book pilot project, and that bill was introduced late because they were working on it as session progressed. And so we are attaching their electronic roster pilot project bill onto the elections omnibus bill. And the pilot project institutes a pilot in the cities of Dilworth, Minnetonka, Moorhead, St. Anthony, and St. Paul. And it establishes a task force, which has a small cost to it, which is contained in this, and then requires the task force to report back to us here on the results of the pilot project. Then the other provision of the bill.
Excuse me, Senator Seaman, as long as we're at that. You're explaining the whole amendment first.
Right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's
Senator
okay.
Seaman.
But the other provision of the A-17 amendment is an agreement that was reached between county election officials and the Citizens for Election Integrity regarding post-election audits. And it concerns the number of audits that occur after an election if there is a recount and the timing in which they occur. Council is here with me and can explain that further if members have questions. But I'm happy to stand for questions first.
We have a question from Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Steven, this is a bill that's traveling separately as well. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair Senator Gazelka, are you referencing the pilot project?
Mr. Chair, yeah, Senator Steven, I know there was one, I think, related to poll books or something. Is this that language?
Senator Steven.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, that is the language. And as I've said to Senator Bonhoff, it was always our hope that that would be included in the larger elections omnibus bill. So that bill has been moving separately, and now we are attaching it to the omnibus bill.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain.
To clarify, make sure I understand this, because my question was, had that poll book bill been through the committee? And what you're saying is that it is running separately, and this has been heard by the elections committee, correct?
Senator Chamberlain, that's correct. It was also heard in the full rules committee, and I believe that's it.
State and local.
Oh, and I'm sorry, state and local government as well.
So, okay, thank you.
And the amended language is what's included in the A-17 amendment.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, go ahead, Senator Stephen.
So, Mr. Chair and members, moving on to the Senate File 677, it is the elections omnibus bill, and there are seven articles to it. The first article includes redistricting changes that impact Stillwater Township, Senator Housley's district, and the city of Edina, Senator Franzen's district. These were provisions that were passed by the Senate in the last legislative session and vetoed by the governor, but I don't think are especially controversial. If members recall, they were vetoed by the governor because they didn't have bipartisan support. The reason they didn't have bipartisan support was not because of the substantive matter of the legislation, but because it was occurring right before the election. Article 2 of the bill establishes early voting in Minnesota. It would start 15 days prior to the election and run through the third day before the election. The bill does not establish vote centers, so it does not allow for polling places to take place at places like a shopping mall or a grocery store like does occur in other states. The polling places would only be established places where people can vote now, like a county auditor's office or a city hall. 32 states, as well as Washington, D.C., currently allow early in-person voting. I'm happy to talk more about that, but in the interest of time, we'll move on to or any of these I'm happy to expand on, but I'll just try to get through it more quickly. Article 3 amends the absentee voting law, so it would allow voters to cast a ballot without excuse. If you members recall, when you fill out an absentee ballot application, you need to check off one of the reasons why you can't vote. Either you're going to be absent from the precinct due to illness or disability, religious observance, or you're serving as an election judge. And so this would allow voters to vote early without any of those excuses. We did hear testimony in the election subcommittee from students who thought this would be helpful, workers who are often called out of town at the last minute, and senior citizens who are very supportive of those changes. Article 4 modifies the procedures following a vacancy and nomination for both partisan and nonpartisan candidates. This is a provision that Senator Rest worked closely on, and Senator Senjum. Senator Senjum, his legislation regarding nonpartisan candidates is included in this article, and then Senator Rest's legislation regarding a process for what would happen if a candidate dies or is incapacitated and unable to serve. It sets out a process for withdrawal and replacement of that candidate if it recurs 79 or more days before an election. Article 5 of the bill, it includes a number of election administration changes that were brought forward by county election officials, most of which are non-controversial. Some of the language just removes obsolete language related to the colors of election ballots, which we no longer use. It also includes an expansion of mail balloting, so it changes the threshold of which a city can utilize mail balloting. It extends it up to 1,000 people. So
excuse me, Senator Stephen. Senator Gazalka has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Stephen, right to that point, I want, while you're talking about it, because I have a lot of small or townships that are precincts and have small numbers, and I'm just wondering if you or anybody from campaign finance has any idea how much that expands the mail-in ballot process.
Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how many additional cities off the top of my head or townships would be eligible. I did have it at some place, so let me just see. I know that the governing body, well, obviously the governing body would have to opt in or decide to want to use it. And it's also for any town not in the metro area. But I don't know if... Oh, Pent is here from the Association of Townships. Or, I'm sorry, Mr. Sulem is here.
Mr. Sulem, would you identify yourself and help us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'm not sure if I have the exact number available. There's 1,784 townships, and I was just conferring with the Secretary of State's office. We believe there's right around 500 that currently are utilizing mail balloting. So there is the vast majority of those townships are well under 1,000 in both population and therefore registered voters. So I can't give you more precise numbers at this point, but that gives you the general big picture, if that helps.
Thank you, Senator Gazalka.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, to the testifier, then for clarification, are you saying that most of those townships would already be eligible and are just choosing not to, or this will open it up to pretty much all those townships?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazalka, this would open it up to the remainder of the townships. Right now, if you figure that there's about a third of townships are using have option for mail balloting, and that's a ballpark number. I'm not trying to lock in a precise amount, but approximately ballpark, a third, a little under a third, are using it, and this would allow the other two-thirds to have access. Out of those who currently would have access, because remember right now the threshold is 400 registered voters, I'd have to do a lot more research to get the breakdown as to registered voters versus population. But assume that in most townships that are in that threshold, you're dealing with a registered voter, eligible voter, because we don't have a very young population.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Senator Sieben. Thank you, Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Sulem. And then moving on to Article... Oh, there are some other provisions in Article 5 that were brought forward by local election administrators. You know, a lot of these I don't think are controversial, so I'll just kind of ask me any questions you have about them. There is, there are some additional training requirements for polling place challengers. So that a challenger who is working at the polls would have to undergo a one-hour training course certified by the Secretary of State every election cycle. And then upon completion, they get a certificate, which they have to use. This is actually brought forward after some local election administrators had some concerns about some of the polling place challengers. Senator Eakin has a provision in here, Senate File 464, Uniform Faithful Presidential Electors Act. It requires electors to vote for the candidate with the most general election votes of their party. I don't think it was controversial, not that I recall at all. And then moving on to Article 6 of the bill, this is largely the felon notification and data changes. If you recall, members, there was a task force called the Election Integrity Task Force that was chaired by the Secretary of State, a member of the public, and Senator Chamberlain and I served on that. And the task force brought forth some changes that include how to more properly or more robustly inform felons when they are eligible to vote again for the purpose of attempting to
reduce the number of felons that incorrectly believe they're eligible to vote. And so Senator Champion carried that legislation this year, and that's included in Article 6. So that was a really brief overview, and there should be... I also... Article 7 of the bill includes the June primary. So, members, if you recall, a couple sessions ago, we changed the primary to be in August for a couple of reasons. This provision was carried by Senator Hoffman, and it would move the primary to the first Tuesday after the third Monday in June. And that is what is in Article 7 of the bill. And then we just added the amendment, which includes the electronic poll books. That's the would round it out. Happy
questions
to stand
or
for
amendments.
Questions.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Stephen, I have an amendment that's 8-13, and I some folks have talked to staff.
We have that amendment. We're going to pass it out first here. If you want to start explaining it, that's great.
I believe it'll be a friendly amendment. I did mention it briefly to Senator Sebin and some other folks who walked around talking to people about it. This will save county some money. It's a practical measure. It's simply, as some of you may know, there are the ballot boxes at the polling place are they're required to have by regulation two drawers where you deals with write-in candidates and regular ballots. But also, according to regs, at the end after the polls close, they're supposed to open up both boxes and check for these write-ins. And essentially what this does, and you can correct me if I missed something in this, but what this amendment does, it says since they already do this, going from the requirement from two drawers to one drawer will save counties some money since they open up both drawers anyway. So I hope you find that as a friendly amendment. It will save counties some money, and it doesn't mess with the process or anything else.
Discussion on the A13 amendment. Senator Sebin.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a good amendment, and I thank Senator Chamberlain for bringing it forward.
All right. So other discussion on the A13 amendment? If not, Senator Chamberlain offers the A13 amendment. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? A13 amendment is added to current file. Other amendments or discussion? Senator Deems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have an amendment, but I do have a question for clarification. Senator Sebin, Article 4, Section 2, talks about vacancies in nominations. As I understand, if it's a partisan office and an individual withdraws his name or passes away 79 days before the general election, that the political party will file a new certificate within 7 days. If it's closer than 79 days before the general election, then the deceased or the withdrawn person's name would stay on the ballot. And that race would not be counted, and there'd be a special election in February. I also, the way it appears to me, that the party of the deceased person would then file an application within 7 days after the general election for a new person to be nominated for that position for that party, but the other party would not have that option. The other party's candidate would just be carried forward in the general election. Is that correct?
Senator Sebin.
Mr. Chair and Senator Deems, that's correct.
Senator Deems.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Follow-up, Senator Sebin. Why would we not allow the other party to also, if they wanted to open it up and see who else might want to run at that point, why would we not allow them to do that?
Senator Sebin.
Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to defer to Senator Rest if she wants to answer since this was her provision, but the way I understand it is that if you have, for instance, if you think back to what happened when Senator Wellstone died, for example, the point of this here is to ensure that then if the death or the incapacitation occurs too close to the general election where that candidate can't be replaced, so that voters who are serving abroad or need to have their absentee ballots transmitted to them in a timely basis. We don't want people to be voting for a person that would no longer be able to run for that office. And so I think the idea was then not that we wanted to open up the entire nomination process again, but only fill that vacancy that occurs as a result, again, either death or incapacitation that would not allow the person to serve in office.
Senator Dames, any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Sieben. I understand that philosophy, but I guess I don't necessarily agree with limiting the other party. But I just need clarification on it, and thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Other discussion, yes.
Senator Rest, did you discuss it at all?
Yeah, no. I think once you start opening it up when the only reason would be a political one rather than the death or the incapacitation of a candidate, then you could go back and forth and back and forth forever. And so if the one party changes because they have to, because there's no candidate, because somebody died, then the other party changes and takes their candidate away, then the first party would then have another opportunity to change their candidate. So if at every time someone changes a candidate, then you're going to be the opportunity to just seesaw back and forth forever. So that's why it's only the change that occurs because someone is incapacitated or dies.
Gotcha.
So that you could go on for a long time because once the second party had changed their candidate, then, once again, it's a new election, and so the first party who had put in a candidate because their candidate had died, why shouldn't they have another opportunity to choose a second candidate or a third candidate and back and forth? So at some point, it has to stop. And the thought is that the really incapacitating reason for that candidate not to be able to be on the ballot is the one that the law should recognize.
Gotcha. Okay.
And you may disagree with that, but that it could go on for a long time if that.
Other
if
questions
you
or amendments?
That kind of opportunity.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a different subject for Senator Sieben. Article 2, clarification on the early voting, because if people can vote, I think it's 2 weeks in advance or whatever that number is.
Mm-hmm.
I can see, you know, both sides getting their vote out and, you know, getting people to the polls or getting them to vote. Have you thought about any additional safeguards so that either hopefully unintentionally but intentionally people may be voting more than once just because there's a longer time frame and people might be getting people out to vote? Have you thought about that at all in this bill?
Yeah. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, the nice thing about early voting is that you're casting your one shot at voting. It's your one shot at voting. So once you, it's not like absentee in person where you can vote and then up until the day before the election you can change your mind and take your vote back. With early voting, you cast your ballot, which I think would have to be part of the education of the public. When you vote early, that is your one chance to vote in that election. So once you vote, then your name is marked off the roster, and then that's transmitted into the statewide voter registration system. And so the ballot or the poll books will be appropriately marked on election day. So if someone did show up to vote on election day, but they had voted the week before, they would be, their name would already have been marked off as having voted. They would not be able to.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben. One more question kind of related to that. So they vote 2 weeks out and through people going door to door or whatever their not convinced anymore and they want to change their vote, they cannot. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Other questions? Amendments?
Okay, I have, we have a, on the A17 amendment, staff has caught an error, and we need to change an appropriation amount. On line 6.10 of the A17 amendment, we should be deleting $366,000 and inserting $433,000.
So I'll move to the chairman. Need a motion.
Moved by Senator Metzen. Any discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The change is made. Other discussion on the amendment or on the bill,
Chairman.
Senator Metzen,
I would move passage of Senate Bill 677 as amended. Is this the last stop? Does it go to finance or?
Yeah, it does, Senator Metzen.
Incorporate that in the motion and.
All right.
Recommend passage and forward to the Finance Committee.
All right. Would you, Senator Champions asked to be contacted?
Yeah, he's on.
Okay. So the motion that, as soon as Senator Champion gets here, the motion will be Senate File 677 as amended be passed and sent to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Seaman.
Mr. Chair, while we're waiting for Senator Champion, I just invite any of my colleagues, if you wish to continue to weigh in on this legislation or can think of ways that would garner some bipartisan support as has been expressed as needed, please feel free to weigh in with me. I'm anxious to hear ideas.
Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Seaman.
Senator Chamberlain.
We have some great suggestions. I don't know if we'll agree on them, though.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chamberlain, you know, my subcommittee is still occasionally meeting. We're happy to consider any bills or anything you'd like. So,
all right. Thank you, Senator Seaman.
Sincerely, even though I'm laughing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Where's Coleman?
Where's Coleman?
Where's
what question is that?
I've only seen Coleman once.
Where's Coleman?
Easy.
Coleman.
We could vote now if you want.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I've been here all day.
Oh, yeah. You guys promise to vote for
it? We don't, so we have to wait. What other committees are meeting
we do ballot vote?
Isn't
there
energy?
Private ballot. Yeah. We both know and ATW.
That's what all the noise is, too.
No, is that's where Senator Cohen is.
I've seen him all the time.
He's never here. He never shows up on anything.
Never been here.
He's been here once, Senator.
Was he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He checked in.
He helped establish.
He said he actually responded to something. I forget what it was. But he did speak.
And he'll be on the conference committee. He hasn't been here.
Next bill will be Senator Rest bill.
To fill your mouth.
Senate file.
Whatever. 661.
661. Is that what it is? Pretty good. I don't know the numbers of mine.
I don't have that many. Stay off the board. It's way back. Yeah, I'm here.
You don't lose if you're right.
That doesn't change anything. This last election, I won by
Buffalo. By what? Right?
Yeah.
The other member of the committee that could be here is Senator Dietzick. She's presenting a bill across the hall. So
that's what I would think.
What about Cohen?
What are you saying, Cohen? I mean,
Cohen.
You could, Senator Chairman, just some advice. If you could lay it over for a minute, let Senator Russ start, unless you think somebody's going to be here in a hurry. Or
well, that's a sure way to get him here, isn't it?
I don't know if it helps.
All right, let's lay this bill over until Senator Chiapian comes and start with 661 as amended. Hopefully, this will just be a couple of minutes, Senator.
Just call here an old.
Thank you.
You just call here an old timer.
I heard it.
Oh, I didn't say that. And we kid one another, we're about the same age. Started together in 1946.
Senate File 661, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 661 is a proposal from the Campaign Finance Board, which is a group of people who are appointed by the governor to oversee our campaign finance laws and to administer them. It is made up of six people, and the body may not have more than three people of one, more than one of the same political persuasion. The board itself is confirmed by both the House and the Senate, and until we pass the MNSURE, the Medical Exchange Bill, it was the only body that needed to be confirmed by both the House and the Senate. Their proposal was approved unanimously by that board before it came here. The bill has been heard in the Rules Committee and in the Judiciary Committee. The remaining items that are in the jurisdiction of this committee have to do with the setting up the contribution limits and the spending limits for the various candidates. And to that end, after a lot of discussion over the past several weeks when the bill was first introduced until today, or until recently, not today, but until recently, a discussion on what was the appropriate level to set those limits at and what was, and should we change the cycle in which spending and contributions were received from a 1 year at a time for all candidates, or should we institute election cycles? The bill started out with election cycles corresponding, and so contributions and spending limits corresponding to the period for which during which we stood for elections. So the constitutional officers had an election cycle of 4 years. The State Senate had an election cycle of 4 years, 2 4-year cycles and 1 2-year cycle. The members of the Minnesota House had a 2-year cycle, and members of the Judiciary had a 6-year cycle. And the amounts that were being proposed for both spending and contributions were tucked into those cycles, different for each one. After a lot of conversation, the amendment that I'm bringing forward changes everyone's reporting and ability to spend and raise to a two-year election cycle, so that for senators, regardless of whether it's a four-year term or a two-year term, their election cycle is 2 years, or I should say their cycle is 2 years. One is a non-election cycle and one is an election cycle. The election cycle is the cycle that is the year before and the year of when they stand for election. So going forward, years 13 and 14 would be their two-year non-election cycle. Years 15 and 16 would be their election cycle. Similarly, for the governor and all of the constitutional officers, since we have four-year cycles. For the members of the House, they would only have an election cycle the year before they run and the year they run. And so the amendment makes adjustments taking into account that two-year cycle. At any point, there's no cycle that's longer than 2 years, whether it's an election cycle or a non-election cycle. But then adjust the amounts that you can raise and spend in each one, so that, for example, in current law, the governor.
How about should we get Senator Sieben?
Oh yes, happy to do that.
Okay, you can stay right there.
I'm just going to stay right here, and we'll vote on her bill.
Senator Sieben, we're going to take Senator Sieben's bill off the table, and again, the motion by Senator Metzen that Senate File 677 as amended be passed and moved on to the Senate
Chair,
Finance Committee.
Roll call, please, on the vote.
And a roll call has been requested. All right. Is that Senator Sieben, any other thing you want to add?
No, thank you.
Okay.
thank you.
Would you take the roll, Mr.
If it
Ritchie?
Passes, thank you.
Roll is being taken.
Senator Saxog.
Yes.
Senator Dietzick. Senator Chamberlain?
No.
Senator Anderson?
No.
Senator Champion?
Yes.
Senator Cohen? Senator Dames?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Metzen?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
Yes.
Landslide.
I vote a 5-4. The Senate File 677 is amended passes. Thank you, Senator Sieben. Okay, on to 671. Thank you very much, Senator Rest, for your patience.
Yeah, that's okay. So 661. So the amendment, which I will offer in just a moment, then creates these two-year segments for the Senate and for the constitutional officers. There's a two-year non-election cycle and a two-year election cycle. For the members of the Minnesota House, there's only the two-year election cycle because it's defined by the second year being the year in which you stand for election. So since we don't stand for election but once every 4 years, that's why we have a non-election cycle. And the same thing is true for the constitutional officers. For example, under current law, for the governor, in the non-election cycle, that first 2 years when it's not running for re-election, current law allows a contribution of a maximum contribution of $500 per year. So within that cycle, even though it's a yearly one, it's a total of $1,000. For members of the Minnesota Senate, because the other ones are similar, They're different amounts, but similar approach. For members of the Minnesota Senate, in the first year following our election, the contribution limit is $100. In year two, it's $100, so that the segment for the non-elect, for the total for the non-election segment is $200, $100 in each year. What is being proposed is that within that two-year segment, not separated by individual years, but within that two-year segment, that for the governor, the limit is raised to $2,000. These are the contribution limits now. For the Attorney General to $1,500, for the Secretary of State and the State Auditor to $1,000, for the Senate to $500, and for the House to $1,000, but understanding that the House only has an election segment. I mean, they have 1 year that's not election, and then the next year it is. So that's their limit. For the rest of us, in year three, which is the non-election year of an election cycle, if you're following that, for the governor, the increase is to $500, and in year four to, well, actually, there's no increase in the non-election year of the cycle, the year four to $2,000. So for the total that can be raised in the election cycle, years three and four, if you're an incumbent, is $2,500 for the governor, lieutenant governor, running as a single candidate. There's no distinction. And then, because they have to run together. For the attorney general, it goes to $200 and $1,000 in the fourth year for a total of, in the current year, of $1,200. In the new limit, it would be $2,500. And I misspoke. The current law for the governor is $2,500 in that cycle, and it would go to $4,000. For the AG, the current in the election cycle, that two-year period preceding the election, the current total limit is $1,200 and would go to $2,500. For members of the Senate, it's $1,200. And would go to, for the Secretary of State and the State Auditor, it's $1,200, would go to $2,000. For members of the Senate, it would go from $600 to $1,000. And, of course, each two-year segment for the members of the House would be $1,000. With regard to spending limits, the existing spending limit in the first 2 years for the four-year terms for the governor is, and I'm going to just round these off, is $1 million. For the AG, $170,000. For Secretary of State and State Auditor, $85,000. For the Senate, $27,000. And for the House, because they are running for election in the second year of that cycle, turns out to be $41,000. The proposed new segment total is $1.5 million for the governor, $200,000 for the AG, that's an increase of like $30,000, $100,000 for the Secretary of State and the State Auditor, that's an increase of $15,000, for the Senate, $30,000, which is an increase of $3,000, and for the House, it is an increase to $60,000 from $41,000. In year three and four, currently, the spending limits, and these are for people that accept the public financing, is $3 million, and that would go to $3.5 for the governor. For the attorney general, it's $500,000, it would go to $6,000. For the Secretary of State and the State Auditor, it's $250,000 approximately, and would go to $300,000. And for the Senate, it's currently $81,000 in the election year, in the election cycle preceding their actual election, would go from $81,000 to $90,000. And so those that is then what the impact of the A25 amendment is, and it differs significantly from the bill as introduced, both in the definition of the election cycle. We got rid of all the four-year cycles, and in the spending limits and the contribution limits. I would also indicate, as part of the jurisdiction of this committee, that the reporting threshold from a contributor is moved from $100 to $50. Oh, I'm sorry, the other way. $100 to $200 before it needs to be reported separately. So, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate all the work that's gone into this from any number of parties. We've been open to hearing from both parties, both bodies, and we think that this is a reasonable modernization of the campaign finance limits, spending, thinking about an election cycle rather than the yearly. It doesn't stop the reporting. The reporting would be done, continue to be done yearly according to the schedule that we already have. It's just changes the internally at what point you may want to raise and or spend dollars. So, for example, you know, if you're a member of the Senate currently from a single source, the limit in the two years when we're not running for election, or the 2 years after we've run for election, is $100 plus $100. And the in the the in the proposal, you would be allowed to. In current law, then, in the third year, it would still be 100, and in the fourth year, it's a 500. So what we are proposing is in that the 2 years following your election, you'd be able to raise $500 from a single source. You could do it all in, you could have $500 from a single source in year one and nothing in year two, or 250 and 250, or anyway, or you, however you want to do it, but you couldn't have... You couldn't have more than $500 from a single source in the 2 years following our election. In the next 2 years, the third year before we're elected, and the fourth year, the year of our election, currently it's $100 in the third year and then $500 in the second year from a single source. With a total within that segment of $600, and that segment now is being raised to, or proposed to be raised to, $1,000, and you can raise it either in the third year, the fourth year, a combination, however you want, but you could not accept from a single source more than $1,000 in the 2 years preceding the election, and that applies to all candidates, whether they're incumbents or not. So that is the A25 amendment, and if you'd like further explanation of that or of any of the other contribution limits or reporting limits, the policy language has been voted on and discussed and amended in the other committees, but the numbers, I think, are open for discussion throughout the bill.
So we need to pass around the A25 amendment, is that right?
I have it in the packet.
I think it was in,
it
I
was
had
in it, the packet.
I had
all
it
right.
distributed in the packet so people
Very
could
good.
Be taking a look at it.
Very good. So further discussion on the A25 amendment. Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator S., because I was looking at the original language thinking, what are you talking about? But if it's not too much trouble, if you do the Senator one more time, just so I can kind of get it in my mind, I'd appreciate it.
Senator S.
Would it be... rather than going through all of the other offices, would it be helpful just to do it for the members of the Senate? Because then
yeah,
I think you can,
yeah.
because
Chair.
We're all familiar with that.
Yeah,
yes.
Senator Gazalka, right.
So under current law, and let's do it for incumbents, but it still would be the case for a new candidate if they if they filed right now, okay, if they filed right now, a campaign committee, they could, they and we could accept a contribution.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain, do you have a...
Yeah, just a point to, I think I was talking to someone else, I'm sorry, but Senator Gazelka wanted, if I get this right, he wanted to kind of have an explanation of what this was, or the Kurt Old Law, right?
Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, actually I'm wanting to know what the amendment is actually doing and just focus on the senator position so at least I can get a handle on it.
Oh, okay. Well, to that point, and I was listening. It is an extensive change, dramatic change to the original language. And those of us here, I think, we're fairly rational, maybe even a little smart. But this is a significant change to this bill, and I don't know that we're equipped here in this committee to handle this. I'm going to suggest, and I doubt this will be accepted, but I would suggest this go back to elections and local gov so they can fully vet this dramatic change a dramatic addition to the original bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, the change that's being considered in this amendment is far more conservative than what was in the original bill that was considered all along. This is a much more, it is a more modest change, taking into consideration all the conversations that have been going on about this bill. So this is not a radical departure, or I wouldn't characterize it as a radical departure from the original bill. I think this is a departure that is moves more back toward what current law is. And the numbers that are being suggested are within the ballpark of just what inflation would have raised these amounts to if we had in the year in which these amounts were passed, which is 1993, 20 years ago. If you applied a modest inflation factor, these amounts are relative to what we would get to, and I'm assuming that we would probably not adjust them again for a number of years, and there's no inflation factor, right? There's no inflation factor applied to the amounts that are being proposed here.
Senator Chamberlain?
Well, I understand that, but I understand the first bill had went significantly higher, but I would still make that suggestion that it should go back.
You want a suggestion or a motion?
I want a motion.
You want a motion to what?
To send it back to elections so they can take a look at this.
Okay, so Senator Chamberlain has made a motion. Is that
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that motion is in order.
The motion that would be in order would delay it on the table, I would think.
Well, I don't know. I guess you could have a motion to send it back to the policy committee, but the issues that brought it to the finance committee are no longer in the jurisdiction of the policy committee. They've already been acted on in the policy committee, which was the committee of original jurisdiction.
What we're going to do, Senator Rest, is Senator Chamberlain.
Take his
we
motion.
Can do this in a minute, but what we're going to do first is if you would please, Senator Rest, answer Senator Gazelka's inquiry.
So, Senator Gazelka, so you and any other candidate for the Senate, let's say someone files a committee right now to run in 2016. Okay. So it applies to everybody. Right now, in this year, you may accept a contribution from a single source of no more than $100. That is also the level of reporting. So every contribution you receive, you don't have to report. You just report the total. Next year, in 2014, same rule. You can raise $100, and it is not reported except as a total, because that's the limit, and then that's also the threshold for reporting. So in 2013 and 14, during that, we'll call that now the non-election cycle, you can raise a total of 200, but no more than 100 from a single source in each of those years. What is being proposed is to consider that two-year cycle as not as a single reporting period, because you'd have to report each time, each year, but in terms of raising money, that you could, the limit would go to $500 from $200, and you could receive $500 from a single source in year one in 2013, and then in 2014, you could receive no money from that source. You could split it, you could do it any way you wanted within that. Then in 2015, current law says the same rule, $100 from a single source, and you still don't report, except you don't report because that's the threshold as well. And in the second year, in 2016, from a single source, $500. And because of the threshold, you would report, again, any contribution above $100, and if you, you know, at any point. So that in the pre-election cycle, the total would be $600, but it's split $100 and $500. And what is being proposed is for that two-year period to move that number to $1,000. Okay. If you adjusted for within the two-year period, if you adjusted for inflation in years three and four, since we passed this in 1993, that number would be $972. So this is not a huge increase that goes beyond what would otherwise be an inflationary increase. And similarly, for the governor, adjusted for inflation since 1993 is $4,050, and we have his contribution limit at $4,000, so kind of a round down. The AG, adjusted for inflation, was like 1944. That one goes up a bit to $2,500. But the Secretary of State and the State Auditor, adjusted for inflation in this last 2 years, again, is 1944 because their limits are the same, and theirs is $2,000. And, again, the House only has one non-election year and one election year. And theirs went from, theirs under this amendment goes from $600, one plus five, to $1,000, which they can raise in either year, a total, but they can raise that amount within that two-year period. Does that make it clear, at least what the proposal is?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Russ, just one more clarification. So that total, the way you've described it, does it matter whether it's an individual or PAC money? Is it all kind of treated the same?
It our campaign finance law distinguishes how much you can raise from the special contributors. As you know, it's
20%.
20% of the total amount that you're of the spending limits, but in terms of an individual contributor, and I'm either a real person or a PAC or as special sources, everyone, the limit applies to all sources except contributions received from your political party, and that's a different limit.
Is that being changed?
Thank you.
And that's not being changed.
Senator, Senator Gazalka, you okay with that?
Yep.
Okay. Senator Dietzick. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Russell, is the House in? It's just continually on an election, two-year election cycle, so they're...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dietzick, yes, because they have 1 year off, and then they're running again. We have 3 years off before we run again, and so that's why the different approach.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I was at the meeting across the hall. Did you get into part of the rationale for doing this, or what was the rationale for doing it? Was part of it because we had a lot of races this last year where you had all this outside money coming in, and so is it to somewhat give candidates the ability to raise money and not have to rely on those outside
And I'll let Mr. Goldsmith give the thinking behind the campaign finance board, but certainly... the appeal, it seemed to me, was that what we need is candidates controlling more of their raising money and spending it rather than outside interest. But these increases are not exorbitant in my mind, and are really reflect the particularly now when talking about the contribution limits, just the. If we had indexed it in 1993, we wouldn't be far off from what is being proposed right now. But I'll let Mr. Chairman, if you would let Mr. Goldsmith talk about the thinking and the rationale that's being proposed coming from the campaign finance board itself. Unanimously,
Chairman,
I might add.
Let me just
Senator Metzen.
Turn to procedurally. Did Mr. Senator Chamberlain make a motion a while back to send it somewhere else, and then we kept talking about another issue.
Actually, what we have is the 825 amendments on the table.
Oh, okay,
I move that first, action's been taken on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that, Madam, Mr. Chair, that came before the Senator Chamberlain's discussion.
Right.
Okay, I'm sorry, I missed a little.
So Senator Rest, is there any other discussion or questions on the 825 amendment? All right, if not, all in favor of the 825 amendment, respond by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The 825 passes. Okay, so at this particular point, is the bill ready for as you would like it, Senator Rest?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, are there any other questions on the bill before Senator Chamberlain?
So just so I understand this, Mr. Chair, so we'll take a vote on the motion. We'll vote to send it back to finance, and then.
Finance policy.
You know, depending on how that goes, then there'll be further discussion.
The question here is your motion is not immediate. The only immediate one is to lay it on the table.
Right.
Okay. So I would your motion will be the first one to be. Right. Okay,
Mr. Chairman. I think the difficulty is that I don't know that. A division in and of itself can move a bill back to a policy committee. The only thing a division can do is, as you indicated, lay it on the table, send it to the finance committee without recommendation, or send it to the finance committee with recommendation. This bill is in the division at the direction of the chair of the finance committee, and it can't bypass the finance committee. I mean, if this was a state government policy and finance division, then as a policy committee, we could move it back to another policy committee. But this bill is captured by the finance committee and can't go anywhere but there or stay here. Those are the two options.
Senator Chamberlain understands that.
Okay.
That we've got a re-referral here, and it's either with recommendation or without.
They're
okay, Senator Deems.
Yes, you're fine.
Okay. Any other questions?
Chairman?
Yes.
I would move that Senate file 661 as amended be recommended to pass and refer it to the full
Mr.
Finance
Chair.
Committee.
Okay. Yeah, that's where we're getting hung up. Okay. I do have an amendment, though.
All right. So.
Okay.
All right. That's part of discussion, amendments and discussion. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you for bearing with me there.
No, no.
I have the 827, Mr. Chairman.
827 amendment.
And, Mr. Chairman, where that's being handed out, Mr. Goldsmith is ready to respond to Senator Dietz's question earlier if you, at
right.
some point, if you would like that to happen.
Very good. Senator Rest, and I apologize, but we're going to ask your motion to you to hold your motion
off.
Until we're done with discussion.
Well, I've made the motion,
okay.
but
That's
you
right.
can still
it's
take
on.
Amendments until we vote on that.
All right, we're at the we have the 827.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain, you want to explain the 827, please?
Yeah, well, you know, what we're doing here, we have a couple of concerns that we need to be discussed, and that the large picture is simply speech and what we're trying to regulate here. I understand what they're trying to address and what we're trying to accomplish with Senator Rest's bill, but I think it goes a step too far, if not further, in restricting speech and crossing the lines of some recent some Supreme Court rulings on how money equals speech. And so the two pieces, the subjectivity of some of these pieces of the legislation, and secondly, to use an old phrase, a chilling effect that this would have on participation in the process. Now, candidates are certainly subject to different rules and standards, but when you talk about the public in general, we may obviously agree or disagree with certain positions, but the court has held that you know, we have to be very careful when we go to regulating speech, limiting it subjectively and having a chilling effect on that conversation. So what this does is goes to Section 5, I believe it was, on page 3, and it strikes the clause number 2, leaves clause 1 there, and then the rest of the amendment goes through and strikes all language related to Section 34, electioneering communications. The first part on page 3, that simply is very subjective and very broad and leads that interpretation up to the Campaign Finance Board. And the second part, that's the part that also has subjectivity to it, but it certainly puts a chilling effect on participation in the process. So I would like members to consider these things before we pass this, because if you do accept this as is, this legislation without these changes, it most certainly face some challenges in the courts again. I think the court's been very clear on what they desire. I understand, again, what we're trying to accomplish here, but I think it goes a little bit too far in trying to do just that, and it can harm a lot of people in their attempts to participate in the election process. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest on the 827.
Mr. Chairman, first I would request a roll call. And then secondly, I would suggest to members that this language is not in the jurisdiction, really, of this committee, although you can vote on anything you want and bring up anything you want. This amendment was surfaced in the Elections Committee. It was rejected. It surfaced in the Judiciary Committee. It was rejected. And what we're bringing forward here today for the consideration of this division are those elements that deal with contributions and spending, and not express advocacy or the electioneering communications that were passed by the other committees. And I also would submit that the express advocacy language that Senator Champion is objecting to is from a Supreme Court case written by the exact words are written by Chief Justice John Roberts. And I would, even though I do not believe it's in the jurisdiction, it is important, and I would like to ask, if you will, Mr. Goldsmith to explain the board's thinking in bringing these provisions forward, and then I would ask members to vote against the amendment. But if you would allow my testifier okay, to do that.
Mr. Chair.
And before that happens, Senator Champion on the 827.
I just want to be clear that it's not Senator Champion who is putting up the 827 amendment. It's Senator Chamberlain. And
sorry,
I know that we do
this,
look alike, but I'm just saying.
Champion? Oh, champion? No, I'm sorry.
You're much better looking.
I'm much better looking at you.
That's what I'm saying.
It's because I saw you raised your hand, and I thought, oh, champion there. That, I know it's Chamberlain.
You know what? I consider
Although
myself
I'm not sure
a champion.
Which one of you,
you
has
know?
More hair?
Chairman.
But Chamberlain is my brother right. from another mother, yes. but I'm just saying.
excuse me. Senator Chamberlain.
We're doing
Chairman.
Fine. We're doing fine.
Right.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, the senator said that this has been heard in a couple of committees. It's been voted down. I think we know the vote count here. And I, for one, am ready to vote. And there's a snowstorm coming, 6 to 10 inches. And I'm sure we don't want to be on the highway. So
Senator Metzen, your advice under consideration. We're going to ask Mr. Goldsmith to give us a brief.
Briefly. Because
brief history.
For members who are not on the other two committees, like Senator
very
Chamberlain.
Good.
I'll be very brief, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Gary Goldsmith. I'm the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. And in bringing forth these provisions, the board is seeking to close two situations which are often referred to as loopholes in campaign finance disclosure in Minnesota. It's important to recognize that these provisions do not limit how much speech can be made by anybody. They don't limit the content. They don't limit the amount of dollars that can be spent. They don't limit the amount that a person can raise to make their speech. With respect to the definition of expressly advocating, and in particular, the lines 3.6 through 3.9 that Senator Chamberlain objects to, that language actually is taken virtually verbatim from the words of Justice Roberts in the Wisconsin Right to Life case, where Justice Roberts said that in order to require disclosure, you don't have to use magic words like vote for, vote against in an independent expenditure. But when you look at the communication, if a reasonable person cannot find any other explanation for the communication but that it is advocacy, then that communication can be subject to disclosure. And it was made very clear that if there's any doubt, then the doubt goes to the communicator and disclosure will not be required. But the court didn't think that this was unclear, and the court certainly didn't think this was unconstitutional because it's Justice Roberts' principle. And this has been recognized by courts and applied by the Supreme Court since then. With respect to electioneering communications, once the Supreme Court recognized that you didn't have to use vote for or vote against, but rather the expanded definition of express advocacy, the next thing people started to do was run ads that were subject to some other interpretation, namely, call Senator A and thank her for her vote on XYZ bill helping Minnesota move forward, or call Senator B and tell him to stop doing such and such an activity. These ads were subject to a different interpretation, namely to influence the legislator on how to vote. So they were not disclosable as express advocacy. And so the Congress passed an electioneering communications bill, which is quite limited. It only applies during election years. So for senators, 3 years, it doesn't apply at all. During the election year, 30 days before the primary and 60 days before the general election, if somebody wants to distribute an ad to the voters in the district that specifically names a candidate, they are going to be required to tell, disclose to the campaign finance board what they spent, whose name they mentioned, and in some cases, where they got the money to do that. We did make some important amendments to this bill that were brought to us by interest groups. For example, the 501c3 nonprofit corporation groups represented by the Minnesota Council on Nonprofits pointed out to us that nonprofits, 501c3s, are entitled to do nonpartisan voter guides, and we hadn't put an exclusion in this bill for that. We added that exclusion, so 501c3 nonprofits will not be covered. Another group, Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life, who's distributed a piece of material to you, came to us and said, we do county fairs, we do church groups, we do lots of informal meetings where we distribute literature. That wasn't the intent of this bill, and we wrote an amendment to exclude those kinds of communications. So when you're talking about disclosing literature, it's only literature that is mailed to the voter at their home or distributed to the voter at their home. Church meetings, county fairs, informal meetings, they can do all of that without being covered by the bill. And so it's to close these important gaps that allow large amounts of money to be spent influencing elections in Minnesota with no disclosure whatsoever that the board has made these proposals. And I might add that in Citizens United, one of the questions was related to electioneering communications, and the court found that the disclosure provision related to electioneering communications passed constitutional muster.
Thank you, Mr. Goldsmith.
Chairman, that's the explanation.
Okay.
Why the proposal stands as it is, and why I would request that members vote against the Chamberlain Amendment.
All right. Any additional?
Just one quick closing
Senator
comment.
Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I wasn't necessarily mentioning limiting speech. The terms were subjectivity to a board, and then that chilling effect it will have on it. And the fear I always harbor as a citizen is once we get something enters the door of this legislature and we get it in code and statute, is that there seems to be no end to it. And this is kind of a path we're following, and it's a concern to me. So with that, I would still suggest, as Senator Ress, I'd request a roll call. And
I already
that's
did.
All. Yep. Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion on the 827? A roll call has been requested. There not being any discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Saxog?
No.
Senator Dietzick?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Anderson?
Yes.
Senator Champion?
No.
Senator Cohen? Senator Dames?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Metzen?
It's up to you. No. I'd be a lobbyist here.
Senator Rest?
No.
Just kidding.
Senator Stump?
Yes.
The vote being 5-5, the amendment fails. Our discussion on the Senate File 661 is amended.
I would just renew my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Chamberlain.
And I, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I've been properly instructed on this that my motion would be to amend Senator Rest's motion back to finance, as we discussed, with the recommendation to be re-referred to rules.
So we have a motion from Senator Rest that this bill should be passed and re-referred to finance, recommended to pass and be referred to full finance, amended. But we haven't amended that be. That motion be what?
Amended to say back to finance, as Senator Rest pointed out,
with
a recommendation to re-refer back to rules. Because rules would have to make the recommendation to go back to the local gov.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Rest.
Senator Chamberlain, I don't think we can direct the rules, the Finance Committee, to do that. Certainly in the Finance Committee, they could pass a motion to send the bill to wherever they wanted, but I don't think that a division can direct the full Finance Committee to act in that way.
Senator Chamberlain, what I think your motion is that it be recommended to pass without recommendation. And you made the first motion, so we'll vote on that.
Yes. So my motion, Mr. Chair, would be for it back to finance, and then the original one was just a recommendation on that motion.
It's not in order.
Just a recommendation on a referral to say back to...
Mr. Chairman,
Respectfully,
that is not advice. A motion that is in order.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying right here is that'll happen to have that'll have to happen in finance.
Sure.
Whoever makes that motion, Senator Anderson make that motion in finance.
That's fine.
Okay. All right. So the first motion we have here is from Senator Chamberlain is to refer. Senate File 661 is amended back to finance without recommendation. Okay? All those
Chair,
in Senator Anderson.
Who made that motion?
Senator Chamberlain.
Without recommendation?
Without recommendation. Okay? All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay.
No.
Nay. The motion fails.
Mr. Chairman, then I would renew my motion that the bill referred to.
Senator Rest moves at 661 as amended. Senator Rest moves that Senate File 661 as amended be referred to finance.
Period.
Be recommended to pass and referred to the full finance committee, and roll call has been requested. Any other discussion? If not, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Saxog.
Yes.
Senator Dietzick.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
No.
Senator Anderson.
No.
Senator Champion.
Yes.
Senator Cohen. Senator Dames.
No.
Senator Gazelka.
No.
Senator Metzen.
Yes.
Senator Rest.
Yes.
Senator Stumpf.
No.
So on a vote of 5-5, that motion fails.
Mr. Chairman?
Any other motion? Yes, Senator Rest.
I would move that Senate File 661 without recommendation be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Rest moves that Senate File 661 as amended be referred to Finance without recommendation.
That's what we just voted on, correct?
We already did that.
We did.
That motion just failed on Senator Chamberlain's motion.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. So it's out of order because it's already been voted.
So somebody has to bring it back. Somebody has to make that motion.
To reconsider.
I move to reconsider.
Okay.
Close.
Senator Rest, you need to make a motion to reconsider.
With Mr. Chairman, there was an intervening motion that was defeated. And so a motion that takes the bill further away from passage is once again in order.
Well, so the chair's going to rule that Senator Rest motion is in order, and I'll repeat the motion that Senator Rest moves that Senate File 661, as amended, be referred to the Senate Finance Committee without recommendation.
Roll call.
And a roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll.
Senator Saxog.
Yes.
Senator Dietzick.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
No.
Senator Anderson.
No.
Senator Champion.
Yes.
Senator Cohen. Senator Dames.
No.
Senator Gazelka.
No.
Senator Metzen.
Yes.
Senator Rest.
Yes.
Senator Stumpf.
Yes.
By a vote of 6-4, the motion passes. The bill will be referred to finance without recommendation. Any other business come before this for this committee. If not, members, tomorrow we're going to finish up our legacy funding request. We have 10 items on the agenda. The people have been told to keep their presentations within 5 minutes. So we're going to see if we can get out of here in a couple hours. With that, the meeting's adjourned.
So in LCCMR,